Word of mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Everybody experiences anxiety at some point. It's part of the human condition. Maybe it's a big presentation at work that has your stomach in knots, or your heart starts pounding in anticipation of a touchy conversation. It's all kind of normal. But for an estimated 25 million people affected by generalized anxiety disorders, even making a phone call can be debilitating. Trying to get out of the house in the morning can set off frightening physical responses like shortness of breath, and forget about trying to sleep. The overwhelming fear response associated with generalized anxiety disorder is not rational or explicable, but holds the dubious distinction of being the most frequently diagnosed mental illness in the U.S. today. Kat Kinsman is senior food and drinks editor for Extra Crispy. That's a website devoted to all things breakfast. She's also a commentator and public speaker on the topics of food and mental health. And her new book is High Anxiety, which explores her own struggles with anxiety. Kat, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you've been writing about and living with anxiety for a long time. You decided to share your experience publicly while you were working at CNN. So why did you decide to go public?
Well, it was a tremendously open environment there. I was the food editor who would occasionally write about other things about, you know, I'd written previously about my experiences with depression. And the thing that happened when I did that was an incredibly warm and passionate and kind response from friends, coworkers, strangers. And I just felt like it was a thing that wasn't being talked about very much. And as soon as I opened that Pandora's box, it seemed like everybody I knew either suffered from this or somebody in their life did too. And I realized at one point over the holiday season a couple of years ago, my anxiety was something that I was keeping from the people even closest to me. And it was starting to affect my relationships. I wouldn't show up at a party or I would be late to something. And I felt like I finally had to come out and explain this. And I wrote a personal essay there that got a really wide response. And it just made me think we really have to talk about this.
So you didn't want to tell anybody. Once you did, everybody jumped on board. So guessing a lot of people really related to that.
Yeah, it's one of those things where we don't really have a good public picture of it. People think of, you know, they play it for comedy, this sort of, you know, neuroses of, you know, somebody is super nervous. But the thing is, there's probably somebody within, you know, a 25-foot radius of you who at some point in the recent past has had a panic attack or woke up in the middle of the night or is having a huge problem making phone calls. But it's for some reason, it feels really shameful. And a lot of people, you know, people around me were saying, well, you know, really, I didn't expect you were an anxious person because you can go on TV easily or get on a plane, whatever it is. But I have sometimes difficulty leaving the house. And that's mortifying because there are millions of people who achieve exactly that every day. So I kept it really close to the vest until I realized it was going to help other people if I talked about it, too.
In fact, you write about feeling as if the house had you in its jaws, sinking its teeth into your hem, your skin. A pretty powerful and scary image. That's one particular experience with anxiety. How does it normally manifest for you?
Well, there is no normal, really. For me personally, it happens a lot when I am trying to leave the house and I'll start to sweat and my hands will shake and I'll try to get to the door and then I'll be very clumsy and I'll drop something, I'll forget something. And it just becomes this almost impenetrable barrier. Or what happens a lot is that I'll wake up in the middle of the night with my heart pounding and feel like something is smashing down onto my chest. And all of a sudden, my head will start to think like, gosh, what do I have to do at work today? You know, what is the thing I have to do after work? And I get in the physical manifestation for me often is, you know, I have difficulty breathing, my stomach hurts, or I claw at my thumb a lot. And it's funny, I know a lot of people have that behavior and I can kind of look around and look at people's thumbs and see where they are on the anxiety spectrum. But it manifests differently for different people.
And this is part of human biology. Our minds are literally on the lookout for danger all the time and sometimes create danger. But those physical feelings of anxiety, those are real, those are measurable, and can really have detrimental effects on the body. Like what?
Well, just in the past few weeks, I've had several different friends go to the ER for panic attacks. They thought they were dying. They really, there's something in them convinced them that they were having a heart attack, that there was something going on. They couldn't breathe. They had palpitations. After a while, it becomes really debilitating. I grind my jaw, so, you know, I find that I have tremendous headaches and neck aches. Other people have severe gastric problems. You know, after a while, when you are in startle mode all the time, when you are hunched up and waiting for something to happen, it doesn't even have to be related to anything. You just know that you're frightened and afraid, and your body is telling you it has this extreme fight or flight response. You wear down after a while.
Well, you said if depression is a black dog, then anxiety is a feral cat. I think it's hard for a lot of people to imagine how that feels. I mean, our culture is very attached to this idea of all of us being able to handle it all. We're attracted, right, to the idea or the veneer of calm, which means competence. So how does this stigma that you're talking about, this kind of aloneness, relate to that anxiety?
Well, you get really, really good at hiding, and it becomes this sort of compounded burden because you don't want to inflict this on other people. You don't want them to have to worry about you. You don't necessarily want to be thought of as crazy or incapable or any of these other things that, you know, we have. Our culture collectively has this really macho notion of how we're all supposed to be. We don't want to be thought of as weak or troubled or any of these sorts of things. But I think we can reframe the conversation and say that for people with any of these disorders, anxiety, panic, depression, OCD, any of these things, to be able to go out into the world while you're suffering through this and just be a person takes more courage and strength than anybody could possibly know. And so I think if we normalize the conversation about this, then people will see it for what it is. I mean, I keep thinking about the word, tough and the word decent. I think we're all so invested in showing our toughness. What we need to do is show our decency to other people and let them know that they are safe and they are not alone, and that even if somebody is having problems, we're all there for each other.
So what has writing about anxiety and talking about it done for you? How has that changed your relationship to your anxiety?
It's been a tremendous thing. I mean, writing the book was a really difficult thing to do because I had to go and relive my most anxious possible moments. But what happened while I was doing it was I was able to identify a certain amount of patterns in my life and see how I react in situations where I I anticipate trouble that isn't necessarily going to be there, or I think the worst possible thing is going to happen, and sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. And I've been able to really go in and change some of my patterns. But even more so, I'm able, since I've been analyzing my own patterns, to identify them in other people and just offer a word of kindness, not even identify the problem. But, you know, I might be irritated that somebody is late with doing something, or they're doing some particular thing. I can backtrack and realize, oh, maybe something else is afoot. And it's given me so much more patience with other people. And I've sort of made it my mission to try to just make a calmer, better world around me. And it really, really is contagious. Kindness and empathy are contagious. And we all need a whole lot more of that right now.
Kat Kinsman is with me. She's a food writer, commentator, and author of the book High Anxiety, Life with a Bad Case of Nerves. That's high, comma, anxiety, in case I didn't specify that well enough. How about some of the other ways that you actually treat your anxiety? What has helped for you?
Well, I love therapy, and I've been going to therapy on and off since I was diagnosed with depression at age 14. So, you know, that's usually been cognitive behavioral therapy, and I had one therapist who really enjoyed hypnosis. And otherwise, you know, medication works really well for a lot of people. I ended up having a very not great experience with it, so it's not a route I really feel I can take, but for some people, it's been a godsend and a lifesaver. So for me, I use a dietary supplement called L-theanine, and it's tea leaf based, and it really helps in the middle of a panic attack to help me calm down a little bit. I also concentrate a whole lot on breathing, just being really, really conscious of it, taking 3 deep breaths in through the nose and out through the mouth. And I find that it really sort of resets my brain and centers me. I work with a lot of different groups, especially chefs, who feel like they don't have a single second to calm down during the day. And I tell them, look, breathing is free. You know, your lungs are with you all day. You might as well use them. And just taking that moment to stop and be conscious of your breathing is tremendously helpful.
I'm glad you mentioned the chefs, because Chefs with Issues is a website that you started. It's kind of a forum for chefs and others in the food business to share their stories and to address the mental health crisis in the food community. What is the connection between chefs and food and mental health?
It's amazing. It's sort of a chicken and egg in that a lot of people who suffer from various mental health issues are drawn to kitchen life because of there's a lot of order to it, and there's also a lot of acceptance from people who maybe didn't find their place in the world in a traditional 9-to-5 career. They find acceptance in the kitchen. And they find their people. And the problem is the life sort of exacerbates then bad habits, drinking, lack of self-care, sometimes substance abuse. And there's a tremendously high rate of suicide in the industry as well. People don't have insurance. They don't have the kind of a culture where people can talk about it either, because it is a really very, very macho culture where you have to be tough and fast, and there isn't any time to talk about how you're actually feeling, and you don't get any days off. So last February, there were at least three suicides that I knew about from chef owners in the industry. And I decided that we really needed to talk about this. So I put out a survey about issues that people were having in the food world, and opened it up. I thought I would get a few dozen responses, and at this point I have over 1,500 responses. Wow. To this, all chefs and people in the food industry talking about what they're up against. So, mm-hmm. It's really real, and luckily people are starting to talk about it and helping each other.
Well, it also leads us to this idea of comfort food. Food is something mm-hmm. that we gather around that makes us happy, that comforts us, especially when it's getting cold and dark. So what food brings you comfort?
Well, it's funny. The website I write for is All Breakfast. So
yes,
I've been...
we are big fans of all things breakfast and that website, Extra Crispy, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Well, we have a great time doing it. And so I've been writing a lot about what to eat in the morning if you have panic, if you have depression. And a lot of it, I've been really, really hooked on oatmeal with hot sauce in it. Because isn't it funny? It's like oatmeal has some properties that soothe the brain and the various systems. And then hot sauce gives you this little endorphin kick. That's a really great way to start the day. Avocados and smoked salmon have a lot of really brain beneficial things that help you just get off to a better start during your day.
Yeah. And it's the routine as well?
The routine is fantastic. I've started meeting friends or colleagues in the morning for breakfast. By the end of the day, I'm sort of worn out and stressed. But if you make a plan to meet somebody first thing in the morning, especially if it's somebody you love, it really just, it lights the rest of the day. It sets a fantastic tone for the day.
Well, even for people who do not have anxiety disorders, the holidays can be really difficult. So do you have any advice for people who are dreading the family gatherings, dinner tables, or, all of the other stuff that comes with it?
Yeah, I think, first of all, have compassion for the people around you, even if you don't suffer this yourself. Somebody, if you're in a room with 5 other people, there's a chance that there's at least one other person who is suffering from this too. Like I say, kindness is free and it is contagious. What I've been telling people is that we all really need to check in on each other and ask people if they're okay and be prepared for them to say no. And, what's the worst that's going to happen? It gets a little bit awkward. That's okay. That's better than somebody suffering in silence. So the other things you can do to my former therapist had a great thing that he called magic bubble, where you just imagine yourself within a bubble. And you can let in whomever you want to, and the bubble keeps the sort of discomfort on the outside of it. So you can just sort of vision this, like these words that are coming toward me that might be hurtful, they can just stop somehow a little bit away from you. They don't actually touch you. If you can envision this happening, practice a little bit before you go into an uncomfortable situation, and say magic bubble, magic bubble, magic bubble to yourself in your head. It sounds so silly, but it's actually really highly effective. And the thing is, once you're done, you can leave. Ideally, if you're having an uncomfortable time, you can, it has an end point. You can leave. It's all going to be okay. You can go back to your own life and you don't have to let it touch you. I know that's really hard to do, but if you can practice that before you go, it's a really good thing to do.
Well, glad we got into the bubble today, Kat. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Kat Kinsman, Senior Food and Drinks Editor for Extra Crispy. That is a website devoted to all things breakfast. Her new book is called High Anxiety, Life with a Bad Case of Nerves. You'll find a link to read more on the book and her work at our website, wordofmouthradio.org.